Welcome to the Language and Literacy Collective podcast, where we share tips and strategies to support language development and encourage a love of literacy in all children. This podcast is hosted by two sisters who share a passion for all things language and literacy. I'm Liz, a speech therapist and behavior analyst.
And I'm Stephanie, a literacy specialist and former classroom teacher. Our goal is to make literacy inclusive and accessible to all by equipping parents and teachers with the tools necessary to best support their kiddos. Now let's get started with today's episode. Hi everyone, welcome back for our fifth episode of the Language and Literacy Collective podcast. We know it's been a while since our last episode, school happened. It has been so crazy busy, and I'm sure all of you teachers listening or moms with school-age children who are listening know exactly what we're talking about.
We've also been really busy with some other projects. For example, we just recorded a podcast episode with SLP Nerdcast on the topic of language and literacy called The Connection Between Language and Literacy, A Beginner's Guide for Pediatric SLPs. This was a super fun experience to be on the other side of things as podcast guests. We can't wait for the episode to air. It's projected for December, so we will definitely keep you posted when it comes out. Our goal for the next few months is to be a bit more consistent with the podcasting game, and we are really excited to have some guests on soon. We already have a few awesome ones lined up, so definitely stay tuned.
Yes, I cannot wait. I was chatting with one of our first guests that we have lined up the other day. She's becoming pretty well known for looking at literacy with a more critical lens, and fun fact, she'll be joining us from outside of the USA. But anyway, today we're going to talk about nonfiction books, and I am so excited.
Yeah, this is something that Steph has been posting a lot about recently, and when we were discussing what our next podcast episode should be, Steph had suggested talking about nonfiction books. And I hate to admit it, but my first reaction was, that sounds really boring. And then this got us going down a long rabbit hole discussing nonfiction and all of its benefits. By the end of the conversation, I was sold.
I'm so excited to talk about this topic and hopefully change some people's minds and get them more interested in all that nonfiction books have to offer. I was not surprised when Liz thought that nonfiction was kind of boring because I recognize that it's not as popular as fiction books. For example, whenever I post about nonfiction books, I have a lot less engagement on my posts. And when I polled my followers about what some of my next giveaways should be, I always consider nonfiction, and the nonfiction books is never really very well received and gets very little votes.
We also talked about when people around our age or older think back about nonfiction books, it's really hard to pinpoint a single nonfiction book that you love or even remember a single title, which is sort of odd. We can easily rattle off a bunch of childhood favorites like Frog and Toad, Corduroy, Charlotte's Web. We could go on and on about fiction books that we've loved. But when I think about nonfiction, I just think about the big clunky textbooks that we had to lug around in school, and that's no fun. So again, our goal for this episode is to change your mind about nonfiction and see it for all of its benefits. Steph, let's start off with our first reason for why we should give a crap about nonfiction books, which is that there are a ton of high-interest nonfiction books.
So nonfiction has come a very, very long way since we were kids. Books written about topics ranging from ants and insects to social-emotional learning topics. There's books about countries and sports and space, how-to books, cookbooks, you name it. There's a nonfiction book about it. Not to mention, books about these topics are available to readers in all reading levels, from your beginning readers of just pictures to really deep and thought-provoking texts. Many schools are ditching their textbooks and moving towards supporting their content areas like science and social studies with high-interest nonfiction books.
This really connects back to what we talked about in episodes 3 and 4 of the podcast, where we shared tips for encouraging a love of reading in your child. And we really stressed the need to establish motivation to read and enjoy books. We know that access to lots of different types of books is key, and helping your child find books that align with their interests is really going to build that reading motivation.
If you're struggling to find high-interest nonfiction books, here are some of my favorite nonfiction authors: Gail Gibbons, Bobby Kalman, Seymour Simon, Sophie Henn, and Steve Jenkins.
Another thing that we've talked about is how nonfiction texts can support struggling or reluctant readers, which is our second reason why you should give a crap about nonfiction.
As we mentioned in our last reason, nonfiction topics are endless. Because there is such a large range in topics, we can often find nonfiction topics of interest to support our reluctant readers because there's so much choice. In addition to motivating reluctant readers, nonfiction books help our reluctant or struggling readers because they can benefit from the text support that nonfiction books can offer. Nonfiction books are organized and also have the support of different text features. For example, the information is often presented in many different ways. You have photographs, illustrations, charts, graphs, maps, and diagrams, to name a few of the text features. The charts, graphs, and diagrams simplify the information to support understanding. Often, all those features are also accompanied by captions. Captions often establish a connection between the image and the text, and the captions also typically summarize the information provided in the image and how it relates to the topic. Nonfiction often highlights new vocabulary and includes a glossary for pronunciation guides and definitions. Often, when I'm reading with one of my students who has trouble decoding or using context clues, we read the glossary first to figure out some of the tricky words we will see and learn the meaning before reading. Lastly, nonfiction books are not necessarily meant to be read cover to cover, so readers can pick up in the middle of a nonfiction book if they'd like, which makes the text less overwhelming.
Okay, so our third reason is that nonfiction allows you to experience the world around you.
So one of my favorite units to teach when I was teaching third grade was our content area reading unit. The students all chose a country to study and read tons of books about their countries. I loved how they were able to have a window to the world that they live in. I loved how they were able to cross-reference the information across books, and I loved how passionate they became about the countries they were studying or otherwise knew nothing about.
Our fourth reason is that they foster a sense of inquiry.
So often when reading nonfiction books, the information children are learning sparks questions and leads students organically to researching or inquiring more about a topic or about related topics. It's kind of how series books work in the fiction world. Interest in one book leads to interest in the next book in the series. When I study nonfiction books with my students, I love to make pairings or have multiple books on the topic or on a related topic because their interest and engagement will be carried over to the next book, kind of like a domino effect.
This may be one of my favorite things about nonfiction texts, because I think fostering a sense of inquiry and a love for learning is one of the best things that we can do as educators and one of the best things that parents can do for their children. So exposure to nonfiction books may be one of the first ways to do this with your child. Our fifth reason is that nonfiction books provide different but equally rich language and literacy opportunities.
So I believe there is a misconception that nonfiction does not require high-level reading skills or that reading them is not as valuable. And I know I shared earlier that it provides tons of support for struggling or reluctant readers, but that does not mean it is void of high-level reading opportunities. Reading nonfiction requires the ability to read accurately, fluently, and comprehend the information that is presented. As readers, you can apply any of those comprehension skills of making connections, making predictions and inferences. You can critique the text, synthesize the information that you're learning, just as you can in fiction texts. Readers also have to be able to differentiate between facts and opinions, and students are also able to compare and contrast information that they're learning from one book to another. As I mentioned before, when I was teaching third grade, one of our units was to have my students read multiple texts on the same topic. We studied countries, but you could do any content area or topic. But students would then synthesize what they learned in one text with another, as well as how topics were presented by multiple authors. There was tons of high-level comprehension happening in nonfiction.
So our sixth and final reason that you should give a crap about nonfiction is that oftentimes nonfiction books include a call to action.
So this is probably my personal favorite thing about nonfiction texts. And I often use the criteria of a call to action when purchasing or recommending nonfiction books. I love when books present information in a way that asks the readers to act in some way, shape, or form. One of my favorite nonfiction books is called Elephants, and it was written by Stephen Bloom. Stephen Bloom is actually a photographer. So the book humanizes elephants. It shares how elephants have feelings. They experience loss and sadness and grief, and elephants really celebrate their families. So while reading this book, you realize how elephants are so similar to us, and the author uses his craft really to humanize the elephants, and you inherently build empathy for them. At the end of the book, it discusses how elephants are hunted for their tusks and asks readers to act in order to end the hunting of elephants. It's such a powerful book and leads readers to sincerely care about the elephants and hopefully make a difference. There are plenty of books with calls to action for readers. Here are some of my favorites. As I mentioned, Elephants by Stephen Bloom, Animals Nobody Loves by Seymour Simon, Humanimal by Christopher Lloyd, and The Power Book by Claire Saunders.
Okay, so to review, our six reasons why you should give a crap about nonfiction books are as follows. One, there are tons of high-interest nonfiction books. Two, nonfiction books can be a great way to engage and motivate struggling or reluctant readers. Three, nonfiction books allow you to experience the world around you. Four, nonfiction books foster a sense of inquiry and can establish the foundation for a lifelong interest in learning. Five, nonfiction books provide literacy and language-rich opportunities. And six, they oftentimes include a call to action. So that's it. We hope that this information on nonfiction books encourages you to start to incorporate nonfiction into your teaching or into your reading with your kiddos. Okay, so the last thing we're going to do in this episode is try to have a little bit of fun. Stephanie, I always joke with her about how she has a book buying problem. So if you follow her on Instagram at the Literacy Party, you'll notice that she's always doing like book unboxing and sharing the book she has at home. And I think she has maybe like thousands. Is it safe to say that you have thousands of books?
Yeah.
I don't know how she pays her bills with all the money that she spends in books. So I thought it would be fun to give her a topic area and see if she can think of a book that goes along with that topic area. Okay, so this is going to be kind of like a little rapid fire. I think I have 9 topic areas. Okay, so I'm going to list the topic, and then you have to list a specific title that goes along.
The first book that comes to mind?
Yeah, the first book that comes along. And then I guess like bonus points if you can list multiple.
More. Well, yeah, okay.
And I am following kind of like a fall theme here.
Oh, okay.
Just for fun. So it's not necessarily just nonfiction, but I guess even more bonus points if it's a nonfiction book, because we're talking about nonfiction today. Okay. So first area is apples.
I'm trying to think of the exact name of the title. Apples by Gail Gibbons.
Okay. Woo, and if you say the author
that's okay.
Triple bonus. Okay. Is that the only one you got?
I mean, there's books about Johnny Appleseed. I have a few of those. 10 Apples on Top. Apples. I think that's all I've got for now.
Okay. Leaves.
Leaves. Leaf Man by Lois Ellert.
Okay. Witches.
Witches by Roald Dahl.
Okay.
That was a better one. Room on the Broom. I don't know the author off the top of my head. Okay, I think that's all I have on witches, too.
Okay. Ghosts.
Ghosts. Man, ghosts. Mom, my new favorite, Gustavo, the Shy Ghost by, I think, Flavia Drago. I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, or first and last name. It's super cute. Other books about ghosts. I think I'm good with one.
Okay, that's good. Halloween.
Well, oh, geez, Louise, Halloween. Okay, so Gustavo the Shy Ghost is a El Dia de los Muertos book. Dracula Spectacular was a new favorite book. That's super cute. It's about vampires, but also ties in some Halloween. Click Clack Boo is about Halloween. Pretty much any pumpkin or witch book, too.
Any with Halloween in the title?
Yeah. Oh, Halloween in the title. Halloween Is by Gail Gibbons. I know I mentioned to you how much I love Gail Gibbons earlier in the episode. She does a ton of really great nonfiction books, especially about seasons and holidays. She has a great selection of those. So Halloween Is.
Okay. Candy.
Candy. Candy. There's been a few of my, like, book friends on the internet, on Instagram, posting about a cute new book about candy. I can think of, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay, that counts. Football.
Football. Another Gail Gibbons, Football Time. Dino Football is another book That's a fiction book. There's a lot of biographies about football players. Yeah.
Okay, boots.
Like boots?
Anything about boots.
Oh, okay. I got a good one about boots. It's not in the title, though. Ollie the Stomper. I don't know if any of you guys have read the book, the Ollie books. Ollie the Stomper is a book about this little duck who wants boots like the other ducklings, Gossie and Gertie, or Goosie and Gertie, I think. It's super cute, and he screams in the middle of it, "I want boots."
Okay, and this is my last one. This is the one I think I thought might stump you. Candles.
Candles. So, okay. I can't think of a single book with the title candles, or the word candles in the title, but I know there's a ton of books, and it's actually kind of going to transition nicely into what I'm going to be doing next with my students. There's tons of books on light and how light is used, to represent like hope and like new beginnings, and a lot of the holidays, the winter holidays, focus around light, like the Kinara and Kwanzaa, lights on the Christmas tree, lights on the menorah and Diwali. Light represents like hope for the future, and tons of holidays have candles in the books, but
okay,
not necessarily like a candle book.
I will accept that. I think you just listed off maybe like 20 to 25 books, which is like really impressive. I thought I was going to stump you with some of them, but Gil Gibbons really helped you out on that
Gil
one.
Gibbons is my jam, but I think, I mean, I literally live in a house filled with books, but I also then go to work in a library. So I'm surrounded by thousands and thousands of books. So whether I own them or not is not necessarily, I own most of the Gil Gibbons books, actually. A big fan.
Also, side note, I thought it was cool the other day how you didn't have certain books in your library, so then you went to another library to get books.
So it was funny. I went on my lunch break. I left the library to go to the library. I left my library to go to the library, and I put aside like 35 books, and I'm still waiting on some of them. But yeah, I this is going to sound crazy, but I never really utilized the public library to support my library in my school, because I've always felt like I have the books that I need. And if I don't have them, I usually typically buy them, but I am currently on a book buying ban that I've put myself on. I wanted to preview a lot of books for the upcoming like winter holidays, and wasn't allowed to buy them.
I'm interested in this book buying ban. So, like, is that, you said it's self-imposed, but
it was a self-imposed book buying ban.
What precipitated that?
I just literally buy books all the time. I have a problem. And I just...
So, like, the interventions from your family
has intervened.
Contributed to the ban.
Yeah, I just need to, like, not... I don't need to have every book. Because here's the thing. I share them with my students, but, like, I don't have my own children. So, like, they're not, like they sit on a shelf, and that kind of makes me sad. Like, if I had kiddos at home who would be, like, tearing through them every day, that would be great. But they're just – they don't get read so much.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Well, this was fun. You aced that little test quiz there. Cool. And – I'm super excited about nonfiction books now.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I'll continue to share them on my feed. If you ever have any questions or are looking for recommendations on books that I love about specific topics, feel free to reach out.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yeah. I'll see you guys next time.